Good morning, diners and travelers of the world, and good morning, rabbit.
Diners and travelers of the world, you have nothing to lose but your chains.
Exactly.
That was workers of the world, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, unite and listen to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
And we're back in the Crescent City.
We're going to do more interviews from New Orleans. I might add, I still have not got rid of that 5 pounds.
but it's coming. I haven't been chasing her hard enough. That's the problem.
That's probably
and
it.
I think at the end of the program, we're going to make a slight detour, but also in a southern direction.
Yeah.
To pick up an excellent interview at a restaurant where we were just before the holidays in Sanibel, Florida, which is a great destination to think about at this time of the year. So we've got a sort of a warm weather program today and some really hot stuff in the food department. Shall we just get on with it?
Let's move on to, we really loved Luke. We went there twice, so let's listen to that.
Well, the most interesting thing is that we went there on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. During the afternoon, and they were expecting to do 500 covers that day, but they were just wonderful people, as calm as all, expecting that they were going to be absolutely packed. And when we were thinking about what to do the next day for dinner, because somehow or other we managed to be hungry, we decided that Luke was absolutely the best place we should go back to again. So we were there twice, well taken care of both times.
A restaurant of our very good friend,
John Besh. Well, I guess we should have mentioned that today's program actually features three of John Besh's, restaurants. That's why we put them together for this particular program.
All right, very good.
Believe it or not, there's method behind our madness. But anyway, here's the chef at Luke.
This is a Merry Christmas. When you hear this, listeners, it will be later, but this is a really prime celebration in New Orleans. Merry Christmas, Peter. Merry Christmas also to Steve McHugh.
Merry
Christmas. Oh, yeah, you say it. Go ahead.
Merry Christmas to you as well.
I mean, I'm amazed. I keep forgetting how really flavorful but also very rich food is in New Orleans. And you did us a tasting menu that was like enough for 14 people.
Well, I hope I didn't hurt you too bad.
Loved every single minute of it.
Good. Now, well, that's the thing we aim to do here, is aim to please. You know, I want to make sure that y'all get what you came here for.
Now, you're not a native to New Orleans.
No, I'm not. And so every time I leave New Orleans, I come back and I forget how rich the food is, too. But I'm originally from Wisconsin.
And grew up on a farm.
Grew up on a farm, just a little dairy farm.
Which is probably the biggest cachet you could have in today's chef market.
I had no idea how important that would be at this stage in my career. But things have kind of seemed to come full circle, not only for me, but for the industry as well, because people are really getting back in tune to where their food comes from and how important it is, you know, in today's food world, in today's economy. It's just that important to be in connection with the farm.
But now this restaurant, Luke, is a connection, it's part of, I should say, I mean, our favorite John Besh, favorite chef, favorite everybody, part of his Besh restaurant group. But it's, I don't want to say a throwback, but it is a reincarnation of an institution, a type of restaurant in New Orleans. Tell us what it is.
Well, Luke is a brasserie, and it's a brasserie in a very true sense of the word, but it also encompasses just a lot of all that's really good about New Orleans, which is great farms that we have in this area, the wonderful abundance of seafood that all chefs in the city have just their hands around. I mean, I think it brings back what brasseries were in this town probably 20, 25 years ago. Now, obviously, I wasn't here 20, 25 years ago, but I see that what the history of New Orleans is and what restaurants used to be here and what restaurants still survive to this day. And we're trying to just really re-encompass that whole mindset of the New Orleans brasserie. And so we make our own beer locally. We raise our own pigs locally. We have farm fresh eggs every day. I think just trying to do as much as that as possible and really being true to the concept and true to ourselves, I think, is probably the most important.
I was impressed. I didn't realize it was such a strong tradition of a German Alsatian cuisine here. This restaurant really reflects that.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, and I think, you know, growing up in Wisconsin, I'm grew up in basically what's almost little Germany, you know.
Yeah, so you know all about
so that. So I found a very good connection for myself in this restaurant, and it's something that I really hold dear, that I believe in, food that I grew up eating. Maybe not all the fresh crab meat and seafood in the middle of the heartland.
Those oysters were to die for. That you served us.
Yeah, and you know, I think I might be biased because I've been in New Orleans for so long, but I think New Orleans has the best oysters. I really do.
I think they do.
Big and plump and great salinity. They're milky, and this is the perfect time of year for oysters. I mean, Christmas just screams oysters to me. I mean,
that with a little champagne which you provided. Yeah. This was a very Merry Christmas.
Yes, it was.
Now, this is in a hotel, so it's probably part of this big trend towards really, really good restaurants and hotels.
Yeah, I mean, when we were approached about this project, we looked at the space, we looked at what area we're in. We're in what's known as the CBD, which is the Central Business District of New Orleans. And so we knew that lunches were going to be a very big factor in our success, and we wanted to come up with a concept that people could come and get a really good burger, a really good pate, and get back to work, you know. And you're talking about a lot of people in this town working half an hour lunch, 45 minute lunch, and so we wanted to really capitalize on who our clientele was. And we, you know, not that we don't do a lot of tourists, because we do. We do have a lot of people that stay in the hotel, but we're surrounded by very large businesses all
around. So that's your clientele, really.
That's our major clientele. This restaurant does tremendous amount of volume at lunchtime and at breakfast time, when there's a lot of buzz going on Monday through Friday downtown here in the heart of the city. And, you know, that's who we cater to. And we want to make sure that, you know, they're not just going to the little fast food joints. They're not going to the little sandwich shops, but they're, you know, little Subways and things. They're coming and getting a good New Orleans meal.
I have to say, we noticed we walked 2 blocks to get here from our hotel, and there's a Quiznos and a Subways along the way. Don't you feel like you'd like to bomb them out of existence?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of what you see in this area of the city. And we knew who our clients were, and we wanted to make sure. And I tell you what, we have clients that come in once a week for lunch, twice a week for lunch, because, you know, they're entertaining clients, they're entertaining people, they're working deals out at the table, and it's just a great place to come do it. And it's loud, and it's the food's very approachable. It's not something that you've got to kind of look at and poke around and try and figure out what it is, you know. And you know, it's just good food done right.
And I love your exhibition kitchen. Now, that's new, right?
That is new. That's something we had built when we started the restaurant. It was kind of came out of necessity. We wanted to expand the kitchen slightly because we do a lot of banquets. We do room service for the hotel that we're in.
You do so much. I mean, your manager said today that you're having 500 covers.
Yeah, for Christmas. We'll do over 500 covers today. It started at 7 o'clock this morning, and we won't quit till 11 o'clock tonight. And, I mean, that's the great thing about opening on Christmas is there's so many restaurants that don't open. And so we, once again, are capitalizing on those people who like to go out and have a bite to eat, you know, and have family in town, might have family in from out of town that want something that's very approachable, want something for the kids, want to take the kids somewhere.
Yeah, whole families in there,
exactly.
And whole big tables.
You know, lots of children.
Let's talk about some of the stuff. We did a tasting menu. Could you tell us a little bit about, tell our listeners what we ate?
Well, other than with the oysters, you started out with
three kinds.
Three different types of oysters. We have our Louisiana oysters. We have Hootenanny oysters from the West Coast. And we have...
I never heard that term, but that's they were very good.
Washington State oyster. And
although I like the locals better.
Yeah, I do too. We try and offer a little bit from all over the country. We probably sell those local oysters. We call them P&J's because that's the company that sells them to us, and they're one of the oldest oyster...
Polish.
Yes, one of the oldest companies in the city.
This
and they
is what
just
makes
do a
New
great
Orleans
job.
So exciting. There's everybody here.
Everybody's here, even boys from Wisconsin, you know?
So, then and we people had, from Pittsburgh.
From Pittsburgh as well. Definitely, you guys. Definitely, and welcome.
Thank you. And so we went from the oysters.
You had a Alsatian onion tart known as the Flammenkuchen.
Flammenkuchen.
And you also had a duck liver and rabbit pate.
Which was to die
right.
For.
It's like eating pure fat almost, but it's just it's a little bit of truffle oil in there and some salt and pepper, butter. And
we had watermelon rind pickle, which I grew up with and Peter had never tasted.
How did you enjoy that? Good?
I mean, I grew up with it. Peter's liked it too. Yeah,
I love them. A little bit of stone ground mustard and some fennel marmalade on there as well with some crusty bread. I mean, that's just perfect starter there, along with the Alsatian onion tart. It seems to be a crowd favorite. Everyone kind of comes in for that. It's just a very basic flatbread with caramelized onions, a little Mornay sauce, cheese, caraway seeds, and lots of Alan Benton's smoky bacon.
Yeah, everybody loves Alan Benton.
Everybody loves Alan Benton.
Is he from Kentucky or where?
Tennessee.
Tennessee. And he's artisanal.
Yes, he is. And I just talked to him the other day. He does a great job. We're actually doing some of his hams today for Christmas. We're doing some of his yearly holiday hams, he calls them, and it's just a cured and smoked product. And then you kind of cook it at your discretion. He recommends deep frying them. We actually baked ours with a sugarcane glaze.
Ah.
But, I mean, he does a wonderful job. We also use his, he does a prosciutto-style ham as well, a cured country ham, he calls it. And it's a phenomenal product.
One of your signatures is, I mean, as if we did not have enough to eat, listeners, we had also a big cone of French fries.
Yeah, big cone of French fries, all house-made. We go through cases and cases of potatoes.
Everybody's eating it in the whole restaurant.
Yeah, just about everyone's getting French fries at their table. And we have specific fryers set up just to cook French fries in, and it's a two-step process. We blanch them in the back and then finish them up on the front kitchen. Yeah, sometimes it's tough to keep up with the French fries around here. It really is.
And then I thought the latkes were totally superior.
Latkes, and it's a bit of a surprise for a lot of people lately, but you know, it's something we put on for the holidays, for the Hanukkah season, and it's all house-made products. We use our a quince marmalade. We make our own applesauce. We do a pear sour cream to go with it, served with salmon.
Do you smoke that in the house?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You do everything right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's been doing really well. People enjoy it, you know, and I think it just fits in with good food done right, with our whole mantra.
And then what did Peter have while I was having the salmon latkes?
You had the pig's foot.
I did.
Oh,
he had the pied de cochon, which is the pig's foot, and I think I had mentioned earlier that we actually raise our own hogs, and so the beauty of that is you get all the yummies that you normally wouldn't find at the butcher shop. So we get the feet, and we get the heads, and we get all the blood, and we make blood sausage out of that. And
now you could talk about this stuff. Years ago, you wouldn't even be able to mention
right,
it. Right,
right. And it's a lot of fun for me because every day it's a learning process for me just to really kind of delve into these old world techniques and ideas. And people enjoy it. I mean, they really like to try new things. And I think people have great understanding about what it is we're trying to do and why we're doing it. You know, I mean, we try to keep our prices low. We want a place that people can come in and not break the bank and break the wallet. And you do that by offering different cuts. You do that by utilizing whole animal. You do that by, you know, maybe offering something that is a little bit different but doesn't really cost you a lot of money to make either.
And then we had shrimp and grits, classic.
Very classic. It's our kind of little take on shrimp and grits. And I think the key to that dish is two things. We use an organic stone ground grit.
Which makes a huge difference. Yeah, it's not like the stuff most people think of.
No, it's a very coarse grain, and it takes about 2 hours to cook. But once it just soaks in all that flavor and all that goodness, and it's really cooked all the way, it just makes a total difference. And we just, you know, people always ask, what'd you put in it? How'd you season it? We really finish it with a little mascarpone and salt, and that's it. And people think there's just all these secret ingredients in the grits, and there's nothing to it, you know. And then the other thing is, for the andouille in the grit with the shrimp, we use a local andouille by the name of Jacobs, which is out of La Place, Louisiana, and it's a very good, very old-world kind of andouille. It's a real thick, round andouille. It's not like these small smoke links that you see sometimes, and they do a great job. And I've been to their plant, and I've been to their, well, I shouldn't say plant. It's more of a smokehouse and very basic ingredients. That adds that much more to the dish.
And then, of course, the choucroute was...
I had to send you the choucroute. I was showing off a little bit there. That is just all from head to toe house-made. We make our own... First off, we make our own sauerkraut. We make a base of sauerkraut out of cabbages, and they're all in season right now. So We actually ferment our own cabbages in the back. And then it's served with a little bit of sausage, some pork knuckles, some pork belly.
The pork belly was really absolutely so.
Yeah, very small pieces of cochon de lait that we use with some baby pigs that we bring in and house-made sausages. So, and then it's served with a little bit of cherry mustard on the side just to kind of sweeten the deal. And, you know, if you're still standing after that, you're in good shape.
Yeah, and then we moved on to dessert.
Dessert.
Tell us the desserts. They were both spectacular.
Well, the desserts you had two. You had a traditional style bread pudding with ice cream and a brown butter caramel sauce that goes over the top. And that brown butter just kind of adds a little nuttiness to the dish.
How many calories is it?
Oh, boy, you can't count calories here. You'd be in trouble.
And that cake was spectacular.
Yeah, and it's a classic gâteau basque that we make of the Basque region that is served with just some red wine stewed berries and a little bit of creme fraiche topped on top. And it's
but there's something Dante. That, I mean, the texture is unreal.
Well, what we do is we'll pipe half the batter and then we'll pastry cream on top of that and then go back on top of that with more of the cake batter. So then as it bakes, it just becomes really soft, almost to the point where you kind of might think, wow, it's kind of undercooked, but it's not. It's just this really moist, rich cake in the middle of it, the pastry cream inside. That's our little secret. So I think, you know, that I believe that's probably my favorite dessert on the menu. Not a day goes by that I don't might sneak one in the back.
You don't. You're skinny as anything.
I have a really bad sweet tooth.
Well, listeners, he's very skinny, and he does very well with sneaking his cake.
Yeah.
We thoroughly enjoyed it. Is there anything else that you'd like to, hours or how to get in touch, a website, something?
Well, our website is, there's a couple ways you can get there. There's chefjohnbesch.com, which actually takes you to all four of our restaurants, Restaurant August, La Provence, Luke, and Besch Steak. And then it's also Luke New Orleans, which will take you straight to Restaurant Luke. We're open 7 days a week. It's 365. After all, it is Christmas today, and we're here cooking away. We do, like I said, breakfast early morning, and we also do a buffet in the morning for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And we're at 333 St. Charles, New Orleans, Louisiana, right on the streetcar line. So if you wanted to take a ride on a streetcar, you
could.
Yeah,
we're doing that, actually. We're going to run as the streetcar goes. We're going to run next to it to burn off some of these calories.
Right.
It was wonderful,
Well,
Chef.
thank you. I really appreciate you guys coming in. I had a great time.
And it was a wonderful. You're a new friend now, and we really enjoyed being here.
Thank you guys so much.
And while we're in New Orleans, of course, we were looking forward to the big time celebration of the year in New Orleans. Not that they don't have celebrations all the time.
They always have celebrations.
The one upcoming around the Feast of Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. And it turns out that Luke's in an excellent position for you to visit it on that particular day. And we asked Chef to just explain a little bit about that.
Now, Chef, we're actually in good time yet to plan for this wonderful event called Mardi Gras. What do you do for that?
Well, Mardi Gras is very special here at the restaurant because we are on the main parade route on St. Charles. So it becomes, let's just say, crazy around here a little bit.
I'll bet.
It's a very busy time. The front of the restaurant is actually covered in booths, people in the stands watching the parades as they go by. And we are open all that time. And the restaurant is very busy. But what we also do is we set a booth up out front. In front of the hotel, and we serve all our beers on tap. We will serve a number of our sandwiches out there. If they'd let me bring a fryer out there, I'd be serving French fries galore, I'm sure. But I don't think that's possible.
They won't let you bring a fryer?
I don't know about all the gas and everything that's involved, and with all those crowds and all those people, it's probably a little too much for the fire department to contend with. But with that aside, you can still come in the restaurant and get French fries if that's what you wish. And it's just it's a great time, and it's a very crazy time here at the restaurant. But it's, you know, like I said, this restaurant is a lot of fun. People know what they come here to get, and really Mardi Gras fits into everything that we're trying to do here in the restaurant.
You seem to be having a really wonderful time.
Yeah.
Okay, listeners, come here. Have fun.
Thank you.
And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station. www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. This is the time in the program when we give you our email address and encourage you to share your thoughts and ideas with us. The address, onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com.
There's actually a place on the website, too, www.onthemenuradio.com, where you can click to send us an email as well, which comes to the same address. So you've got a couple of options here.
And then you can blog, too.
You can also blog at onthemenuradio.blogspot.com. So there's all kinds of ways to get in touch with you, and of course we just
get in touch with us.
Yeah, get in touch with us. We'll get in touch with you if you get in touch with us.
It's a deal.
There we go. So anyway,
place was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
And there's a wonderful story behind the future of La Provence, which had a famous past, but is I think going to have an even more exciting future. We made a Sunday brunch trip into the country of Louisiana to a place called Lacombe officially. I think the chef says it's actually called Big Branch or somewhere like that just down the road. But about an hour outside of New Orleans and just in a wonderful, quiet piece of countryside. And it's a real foodie's haven.
On the Menu has just had an absolutely scrumptious meal at the hands of executive chef. Is it executive chef?
Yes, ma'am.
Executive Chef Randy Lewis at La Provence. And could you tell us where we are, Randy?
We are in Big Branch, Louisiana. So we are about 45 minutes north of New Orleans, Louisiana, kind of on the north side of the lake, Lake Pontchartrain, about 10 miles from Mandeville, which is probably the biggest point on the map that somebody might be able to recognize.
The thing that I noted the most about the menu, first of all, it was a very creative menu. You'll talk about that later. You have what I view as the real ultimate test of chefs, perfect seasoning. I mean, just most people don't get that, actually. I don't think.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you noticed that, because, I mean, I think that's one of the key ingredients of being a chef is, some of the simplicity of as simple as seasoning and salting and using your spices. I mean, if you can't get that right, then you can't, probably get majority of other things right. So,
but it's rare. Anyhow.
No comment.
I know. All right. So, but anyhow, we have two stories here to start with. One is this historic restaurant, La Provence. Could you tell us a little bit about how this came to be and what the background is?
Certainly. Chef Chris, who,
tell me his last name.
Caragiorgio.
I
probably
say that.
Didn't pronounce it correctly. But Chef Chris actually opened La Provence 36 years ago. He came out in the country. He was from France originally. Well, actually, he was Greek and then grew up in France and came to America and worked in the States. And he came to New Orleans and worked at some hotels in New Orleans. And he always had a dream of, opening a restaurant in the country from what he remembered in Provence, France. And he came upon this little space in Big Branch, which I have no idea how he found it, but I guess a realtor or something. And he opened this, first it was kind of actually a truck stop, not that he opened, but he took over a road stand, kind of a burger kind of joint, and had some little rooms on the side. And throughout the years, probably about 5 years into it, he really built, this incredible French Provence style restaurant. I mean, I think, even myself and everybody that walks in here, when you walk in, no matter where you come from Annaville, New Orleans, or traveling, you really feel like you stepped in a European restaurant. We have, great fireplaces here that are lit, and right now it's wintertime, so they're lit.
And you have a farm and a barnyard.
Yeah, we actually, in the last couple of years, unfortunately, Chef Chris passed away a couple of years ago, and we took over, and John Besh and myself, and we've kind of put a little, there's some room in the back that we decided to put a little farm, so we're raising some Berkshire pigs and some chickens for their eggs. We have sheep, some gardens, and trying to, grow what we can here. We can't grow 100% here because we're not, we're only on 2 acres, but, it's kind of a hobby farm, and I consider myself a gentleman farmer now.
Oh, yeah, that's what your wife, KK, said. You wear boots and consider yourself a gentleman farmer.
I go out there. But back to so Chef Chris, built this incredible mecca, and I remember growing up because I grew up not too far from here, and when we would celebrate, we would definitely come to La Provence, and you would come here, and there'd be movie stars or royalty or
really?
Who knows who was here, and it was just the place to be. And he built this, you know, I remember reading Zagat way back then. It was like one of the top Zagat-rated restaurants in the country, and did an incredible thing here. And actually, before I went to culinary school, I didn't really have much cooking experience, so my father was like, well, maybe you should work in a kitchen before I shell out all this money to send you to culinary school. So I was living here, and you know, what better restaurant to learn from? So I came and asked Chef Chris if...
But I mean, to finish the story, this restaurant built and became an iconic restaurant.
Yes.
In like rural Louisiana, and you actually worked here.
Yes.
And so did...
So did Chef Besh. So Chef Besh was actually... I worked here first, right before I went to culinary school, and then I went away to culinary school, and then John came after that, and he was a sous chef here, and he worked for Chef Chris for a bit.
Okay, but what happened? So to finish the story with La Provence,
so Chef Chris had it for 34 years,
okay,
and unfortunately
and he
passed away, and we wanted... John wanted to preserve La Provence since he had the history here and didn't want to see it go to the wayside or see somebody buy it and turn it into a Mexican restaurant. So
okay.
He purchased it a couple of years ago and he was running it. And John has many of restaurants right now.
Right.
And he's been, I was in California at the time, and he's been trying to get me back to New Orleans. And
okay,
and
jump then to you. You started here.
Yeah.
You have an interesting story too. You've been all over.
I'm like a gypsy, I guess.
You are a gypsy.
So I grew up in Louisiana in Covington, actually about 20 miles from La Provence.
Did you hunt and do all those things?
I did a bit. Not quite as much as John and some of the other locals people, but I did a bit of it. So then I had interest in cooking, just from growing up in Louisiana, that our history and our culture has such a rich, you know, is focused around cuisine down here. And then my father loved to eat, and we traveled a lot, and we went to Europe when we were kids. And
yeah, you were an adventurous eater, I understand.
Yeah, no, I mean, from day one, I would try snails, I would try eel, anything that they would put in front of me, I would try it. And, you know, maybe not when I was really young, but, you know, as I became in my teens, I was definitely willing to try anything that was on the plate.
So then you figured you were going to do this, right?
Yeah.
And your dad said, come work here first.
Well, he said you should probably work in a kitchen before you go off to culinary school. And so I decided to come here and work at a great restaurant. And I worked Chef Chris for a bit. And I kind of started later on in life. I learned a lot here, but I kind of wanted more of a broad experience, and that's why I went kind of to culinary school. So I went to
New England.
New England Culinary Institute in Vermont. Did that for a bit, and then after I left school there, I went and worked with Norman Van Aken down in Coral Gables,
that's
Miami.
That's a whole other cuisine. Yeah.
Which was, you know, amazing. I mean, you think Norman does...
He's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, and a very intelligent guy, and he kind of really taught me, working in his restaurants, how important ingredients are.
But he's a very different style cook.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. But, you know, if you look at Louisiana, it's built around spices also, especially Creole and Cajun cuisine. And Norman's cuisine is following the spice trade. So it doesn't really have maybe a Cajun or Creole influence, but it definitely has that Caribbean and that spice trade, started in Spain and started in Mallorca and what have you. So there I learned the importance of fresh ingredients and getting best of the best and keeping using it in the appropriate way and making sure that you don't.
And then you came back to New Orleans.
Then I came back to New Orleans for a bit. In between that, I kind of worked around. I was a private chef for a gentleman and kind of worked throughout the country a bit. And I decided to come back to New Orleans and started working on my first restaurant. It was called Restaurant Indigo, where opened that in 2001. And very graciously, Food & Wine magazine chose me one of the 10 best new chefs in America.
Yeah, and that's hot stuff. That's pretty good.
So that was very exciting. So I did that for a bit, and then I decided the traveling bug, I guess, hit again, and I decided to go out to California, where, you know, to me, California at the time, and still is to some degree, is kind of the Europe of America. I mean, they have the wine industry, they have the great products, they're the great, you know, farmers, and you know exactly who's growing your products and where you're sourcing all your ingredients from. So I went out there and I worked for a group of wineries and did their culinary needs, which everything from doing dinners to banquets to auction lots to traveling around the world to Asia and doing wine dinners and teaching. And
and all kinds of things.
I read something you did that was really off the wall. What was that? You had...
Well, one year, we have, with one of the wineries, we had a 5-acre garden, and we grow 180 different heirloom tomatoes.
That's it.
And
yeah, and
one year we shipped them all to Hong Kong, and we did a tomato festival in Hong Kong, which was quite quite our ordeal, because we had to ship them over, and, you know, tomatoes, when they're ripe, can be a little temperamental, and they like to bruise very easily. So we shipped it over, and we, at the Intercontinental in Hong Kong, we put on a big tomato festival that we do.
And well, how did the Japanese react to this?
They enjoyed it. I mean, I think, you know, the Chinese are very, you know, acceptable, and we were pairing with wine, and so they're very enthusiastic. And Hong Kong is made up, you know, of a very big, you know, mixed, you know, expat kind of.
Yeah, right. Okay, so then you left that job, and then what?
And then I had a couple of restaurants out in wine country, and got great reviews from Michael Bauer, which we were very, very pleased with. And John would come out and visit me a couple of times, and he was always like, I would love to get you back into New Orleans, and after, you know, Katrina. And I was, you know, and being from New Orleans, and after Katrina hit, it was always kind of appealing to me, you know, because I always said I'll probably never go back. I really loved California, but it just, something kind of strikes you, I think, as a New Orleanian, when your city becomes under duress, and you kind of want to go back and do your part. You know, not saying a chef could do that much, but we can come down here and support business and grow businesses. And
there you met your wife, who is astonishingly wonderful. You are so lucky.
I'm a lucky man.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I met her in California, and somehow I talked her into coming back to Louisiana, and John and I said, let's go back and let's do this La Provence, and it just seemed to make sense, and we're glad to be here. We moved back in July, and it's been, you know, great success, and we're looking forward to many happy years here.
Well, you served up, I mean, you know, I get a lot of good food, we do, and this was really exceptional.
Well, thank you.
I would recommend to anybody, and anybody listening,
to come here and
do this food tasting menu is what we had. Just pick like 3 items off this and tell us about them.
Well, I mean, since La Provence has 36 years of history, you know, and then myself coming in, you know, I definitely want to preserve, you know, the heritage that is here. You know, it has a Provençal and what Chef Chris has done. But also, you know, maybe bring a little bit of my influence, but without, you know, trying to be too much. I mean, right when I got here, we were kind of playing around with what direction should we bring the menu. And I think I've really kind of honed it down now that I really kind of want to follow in that rich history of La Provence and that kind of French kind of heritage, and, you know, and incorporate as much local and fresh ingredients as we can, and use the gardens in the back. Just to talk about it, like kind of doing a play, since New Orleans is known for their oysters Rockefeller, we took that a little one step further, and we're, instead of using oysters, using a little basil-fed snails from France.
I thought was the trickiest thing I'd ever heard. Why not? I mean, I've fed snails.
Yeah.
Everybody said, why would you feed them basil instead of something else? That's great.
Just for the flavor wise, just to, you know.
No, I'm saying that's fabulous. Yeah. Brilliant.
And, you know, it's just kind of a play on oysters Rockefeller, so we make a kind of a Rockefeller puree where we use spinach and watercress and pernil and a lot of herbs and butter and oil and garlic, and then we kind of just slowly warm the snails into that, and then we do a little breadcrumbs on top of that. And then another thing I kind of like to play with is, you know, in Morocco, you know, there's definitely a Moroccan influence in southern France just due to the occupation when they're running Morocco. So I kind of like to play that in one dish that we're doing is a little golf shrimp tagine.
That was also very good.
So we make our own little shrimp merguez sausage. So it's 100% shrimp meat, but we grind half the shrimp up, we dice the other half up, and then we incorporate some Moroccan spices to that. Then we roll that, and we slowly poach those, and that's served in some couscous that we actually cook in Moroccan mint tea. So we have some mint growing in the back.
That was a great touch. That mint tea was fabulous.
And then we finish with a little Marocana almonds with that. Then, due to the season and kind of the holiday season, I did a little breast of goose. It's funny because I really haven't done a lot with goose in my life, and I've always remembered growing up asking my mother, do we have to have turkey for Christmas all the time? Since we just had it for Thanksgiving, we should do a goose, but she never did one. So I'm like, this Christmas, that's what I'm going to put on the menu, and that's what I'm going to serve during the holidays. So we got whole geese in. We broke them down, and we slowly roast the breast. And then with the legs and the thigh, we make a French boudin, so not kind of the Cajun, because in Louisiana, boudin kind of means a little different. It's like kind of a rice sausage, but we do kind of the classic French, which is kind of an emulsified sausage, so using the leg meat and kind of season that up and slowly poach that, and then we just serve that with a little braised red cabbage that we have some apples, some bacon, some apple cider.
It was absolutely, Randy, yum, yum, yum. The whole meal was yum. How far is this from the downtown Central Business District, New Orleans?
New Orleans, anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour, just kind of depending on the time of the day and where you are.
And you need a car?
Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of people that get a car and they come here and they like to enjoy themselves and partake in a little vino. And so they have a driver to take them
home. Is there some place actually to stay nearby?
There's some great bread and breakfasts in Mandeville and in Covington. So, and hopefully our vision here is eventually to maybe put some rooms on the property here so we can get some people, you know, and it'll be just like you are in Europe where you can go and stay and have a great meal and walk around the farm.
Well, we loved it. Absolutely. You have a website?
Yeah, we do. It's LaProvenceRestaurant.com.
Loved it. Thank you so much, Randy.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And now it's time to pause again.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again. Welcome back. We're moving on to a quite different location. If you consider how calm and peaceful La Combe was and La Provence was, here we are now at Besh Steak, which is right smack in the middle of a very loud casino.
So if La Provence is bucolic, what's the word for Besh Steak?
Frenetic.
Frenetic, there we go.
The restaurant itself is calm. Yeah.
How did I know you'd have just the word? Bucolic versus frenetic. So here we are being frenetic.
Jared Tease, I'm so glad we finally got your correct name here because I think your publicist said it wrong. But anyhow, this is the most unique place I've ever been for a fine dining restaurant. Hello and welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you. I'm delighted y'all are here.
Well, you're delightful and... I didn't know a lot about your background. Turns out that you were actually not a New Orleans, but you were a Texan.
Correct. That's from Galveston, Texas, Houston area.
Yeah. But you came here early on to go to culinary school after a previous academic career, right?
Correct.
I mean, degree.
Correct. It's a city of food, and it kind of drew me. And I've never left. I met my wife here. I have my family here. And we just love New Orleans very, very much.
Now, you said you fell in love with food because of your father, who actually cooked.
He was a terrific cook. He took care of me as I was growing up. Really was instrumental in the entertainment, which is part of the lure, I think, in this business, is being able to have great customers come in, put your best foot forward, and watch them leave and return again and just... You know, it's a whole entertainment factor that's done
for
us.
You love the whole hospitality entertainment aspect of it. So you probably are doing all right in this environment. But before we get into that, you have worked for really major restaurants in New Orleans,
correct,
including Commander's Palace, Baco.
Baco's, yes.
So you actually got connected up right away with the Brennans.
Correct. There was a Brennan's restaurant in Houston, and growing up as a teenager, we would go there for special events, you know, like a Christmas celebration.
They do, that's right. Is that Dickie or Ralph?
That's actually the other side of the family from Dickie. That's his cousin.
Ralph.
That runs that.
Ralph.
And it always was synonymous to great entertainment when you could go to a restaurant of that caliber. And here in New Orleans, not only was there one or two, there was three or four of those restaurants. A nice little small culinary school, something that I could afford on an internship pay. And so it was just a good combination when I came here in, I believe it was 92.
I mean, if you're interested in food and you're interested in entertaining and you're interested in, the whole hospitality industry. This is the place to go if you're in the South.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you left there and joined forces with John Besh, who is one of our most favorite chefs in the whole world. How did that work? Where did you go?
I'll tell you what, I got an incredible opportunity to come on board with John and his group. They had this restaurant and also Restaurant August, and soon to
be... We love Restaurant August.
Soon to be two more restaurants to the brand, which was La Provence and Luke.
We love both of those, too.
I do, too. I've opened two of his four restaurants, and he's been a huge supporter. He's a great family man, as we were talking earlier. And he really,
four sons. His
exactly.
Wife's a saint, right?
And he just, he's a hard worker, and he's a motivator, and he's good people. So it's been a great fit for me, and I wouldn't have changed anything that I've done since I've been with him.
Well, you certainly, he must have so much confidence and faith in you to put you into all these openings. And he put you in a really unusual situation with Besh Steak, which is where we are now.
Correct.
In the very heart of a casino. Is this Harazer?
Yeah, this is absolutely the heart. This used to be the old Rivergate complex where they had, different shows. And then they built a casino in the middle of it. So we're, not the French Quarter. We're not downtown. We got our own little niche at the foot of Canal Street, and it's great.
You get all kinds of customers. Yeah, I was going to ask you, first of all, what's it like for you to work in this kind of a really loud, hyper atmosphere?
It's actually not as loud in the kitchen. We have a great crew. They come in, they work extremely hard. The casino is a good supporter for a staff, small staff of about 20 cooks. And it's very unique. You've got high rollers that come in and eat. You've got celebrities that come in and eat. You've got, a mix of all kinds of great customers.
I was going to say, who comes in and eats? Because you're in competition with all these all-you-can-eat cafeteria places outside or buffet places outside.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's entertainment. And as we were talking earlier, people come in here to be entertained. They come in here to get a great meal and be entertained. So it's a good niche for us. People love the food that we do, and they're good to us.
People come here just to eat here, or they come as part of going to the casino?
They really come both. A lot of them are players that take a break from the floor and come in and have a great steak with us or some good seafood. A lot of times during special times of the year, like what's coming up, New Year's Eve tomorrow, and Christmas and Thanksgiving, they'll come in especially just to eat with us.
I mean, like tomorrow, how many people are you going to turn over with them?
We're probably talking about
New Year's Eve. A couple hundred?
No, I thought I was disturbing you. Blue Dog pictures are checking out. Some great artwork do we have here in the restaurant.
Oh, yeah, we just learned the story of Blue Dog, but that's another conversation, yeah. Did you have to modify? John Besh has certain standards.
Absolutely.
Yeah, did you have to modify any of those to open this restaurant?
I'll tell you what, John is just really pushed me to do my very best with food, and I really have evolved since joining his team, and I didn't have to change at all. I just did what we love to cook at home for our families and friends, what we like to go to the camps and eat, and that's what we bring into the restaurants. It's a little more glitzy and glamour, a lot more on presentation than it would be at home, but I haven't changed my food at all. I think it's only gotten better.
How about what can we look forward to eating tonight? Tell us about some of the specialties of your restaurant.
We've got some tried and true heroes on the menu. We've got an incredible black pepper barbecue shrimp that we're going to try. We've got some really, really fresh blue meat, crab meat, jumbalum crab tossed in ravigote sauce. There's some huge shrimp, 10-15 jumbo shrimp that have been boiled in a little bit of Zatarain's and dipped in the remoulade sauce. There's a lot of showstoppers. People come in, and we don't change a lot of these appetizers. We do run a special menu that is a farmer's market menu, and I go to the market twice a week, try and pick up ingredients and bring them back to the restaurant. And that, in turn, not only gives us fresh local ingredients, but also teaches the cooks and inspires them to want to move up as well.
Jared, it sounds to me like you're not like you didn't find a niche. You created one. And I guess that your customers, the clients follow you here.
Yeah, it's been about 3 months, 4 months here at Besh Steakhouse. It was a great year at Luke. And so I think we're just going to build our customer base strictly on performance, being able to provide for those customers, giving them a great experience when they come in, and a timely meal, which is very important because they take breaks from the floor here at the gaming, come get a dinner, but they can't take too much time off the floor. So they want to be, you know, they want it quick. And that's what we do. We provide a great meal, very fast, and a great entertainment.
You sound like you are having one great time.
I am. I'm very lucky.
Well, I can hardly wait to taste your food. You've been wonderful. Thank you so much. You're
pleasure.
A budding media star, I think.
I don't know about that. John's got that one on me.
Well, we'll see. Well, I think we're going to watch. Thanks a lot, Jared.
Did you
have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I want to get in the kitchen and
cool
put some of those foods together for you so y'all can start tasting all of our great stuff.
I mean, listeners, this is a busy, busy restaurant, busy kitchen, although it's a lovely kitchen, by the way. Can I congratulate you on that? Very efficient. And thank you again.
Our pleasure.
Bye.
If it's interesting to run a restaurant in the middle of a casino, it must be even more interesting to run the wine program in a restaurant in a casino. Jeffrey Galata, he's joining us. He's the general manager, but also the wine guru at Besh Steak here in the Harrah's Casino in New Orleans. Jeff, first of all, welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
And follow on in my theme. What's it like when people come off the floor and they're either celebrating or commiserating? What does the wine man have to do?
A little bit of everything. I'm also the general manager here, so doing the running the day-to-day operations of the restaurant and running the wine program gets to be kind of like a three-ring circus sometimes. It can be a little crazy, but it's always fun. There's never a dull moment, and we're always tasting great wine and hanging out with the people that we enjoy to be with.
What's your list like?
What's my list
like? What's your wine list?
It's much more what we consider a steakhouse list. The heavy emphasis on Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, Shiraz, not so much on your Pinot Noirs or Zinfandels, but we do stock some very, very nice ones. We tend to go with the larger steak wines, big beef wines.
Now, if someone's coming in here and they're looking for a big steak because they just won something big,
mm-hmm.
What would jump off your wine list as something that they
well,
might have?
Well, we try to steer them towards some smaller production wineries. We do a lot of artisan-style wines, things that you may not have heard of before. We don't stock a lot of the huge names.
Try our listeners on a few names so they'll recognize them and
as
them
opposed
when they
to,
can.
As opposed to steering you towards a Silver Oak or a Kendall Jackson or the names that you know a lot of, I would steer you towards an Hourglass or a Shelter or some of the smaller ones, Orrin Swift producer, things that you don't necessarily find on every list. We tend to try and focus on some of the more, some people call them art house wines or things like that, and just something that's more fun and more eclectic, introduce you to something new.
Well, you mentioned a few names I haven't heard of, so it sounds like we might be able to have a little bit of an adventure of ourselves, which is
mm-hmm.
always fun. Now, do you do a sparkling wine as well?
Absolutely.
Seems like people would celebrate with that.
We do a full complement of sparkling wines, a lot of traditional champagnes, and again, a few of the weirder things that are a little on the edge. We do some domestic stuff. Right now I'm pouring a Torli by the glass, which is actually a Hungarian sparkling that is just out of this world. It's a Grand Brut, but it's done in the Méthode Champenoise, but it's not a champagne, obviously, because it's from Hungary. But it's a delicious wine, a little something that we found on the fringe and decided to try and pour it by the glass, and thus far we've gotten a really, really great feedback on it.
And how are things going for Besh Steak?
Going very well.
Going really well?
Mm-hmm. Going very, very well. As you can hear, the casino's loud, and we got lots of people in here, and we're heading into our New Year's celebration tomorrow, which is going to be completely crazy, bombastic, off the hook, whatever you want to call it. It's going to be wild.
Probably a little bit too late for listeners to get on the list for New Year's Eve, but upcoming's a big thing in mm-hmm. New Orleans called Fat Tuesday or Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras.
If people are interested in dining at Besh Steak mm-hmm. for Mardi Gras, would they need to reserve a long time in advance?
The Mardi Gras season is not quite as busy as you would expect. A lot of people are out in the streets partying it up, and it's more of a beer and fried food holiday as opposed to a steak and wine holiday. But we do see a decent amount of business in the casino, so usually by the end of the day, we get a lot of people walking in. I would recommend making reservations at any time just to be on the safe side.
But it only need to be just a few days ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to try this, listeners, and afterwards we'll tell you whether it lived up to the reputation that we just recorded.
Okay.
I'm sure it will. Jeff, thank you so much for joining On the Menu.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
Now we'll take one more break, but do come back because we have yet one other interview.
And it's a secret dining spot in a heavenly place called Sanibel Island, which is a great time to go at this time of the year, and it's a great place to go eat.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Quite by accident, actually, because we were just looking for some place to go to dinner, visiting our friends Margot and Dick Feldstein in Sanibel Island. We hit on a place that has been on our radar for quite a long period of time and picked up the phone and called Sweet Melissa's Cafe and its chef, Melissa Talmadge. Melissa, welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you very much, and welcome to Sanibel.
We love it.
It's a beautiful place. A beautiful place it is, for sure.
Now, you have a kind of a complicated background. You were not always a chef.
No, I was not. I actually spent 4 years in government before deciding to go back to culinary school on a whim and just happened to fall in love with a restaurant industry and with cooking and just really happy to be doing what I'm doing right now.
You seem to have a rainbow of luck over your head. You've lucked into the best situations I've ever heard of. Tell us about why you're here.
I think that, yes, I have been very lucky, and I think I've been able to capitalize on a lot of that luck. First job out of culinary school working at Union Square Cafe, you know, you can't ask for any better. And then was able to, when we moved to New Orleans after leaving New York City, was able to use that experience to help me get a job at Commander's Palace. And I definitely a work ethic. I worked every single station at Commander's Palace and spent a lot of time there and put in a lot of hours and realized that there were some chefs there who had a lot of knowledge and did everything I could to extrapolate that from them. I would be in, well, why are you doing that? What's that? Well, if you did it that way, how are we going to do this? Or why don't we do this? And it was just an extremely nurturing and, environment for me to get the bulk of my training. And now sort of to come and do it on my own, it was this summer I had Tori McPhail show up at my door, the executive chef at Commander's Palace. And it was the most nerve-wracking thing cooking dinner for him because it was someone that I look up to and admire so much and so valued his opinion. I didn't think I was going to make it through the dinner, but we
did. But he was a greenhorn when he took on.
Yeah, but, and to do things like that right now, I'm just very fortunate to have that opportunity.
Sandra, why are you here again? And I'd like to know what your market is like here. Who are your customers? Sanibel. I don't think we've mentioned Sanibel. You're on Sanibel Island.
Sanibel, actually, there's what I call three different populations here. There is the population of people that live here full-time, and they tend to be actually a lot of younger people with families are moving here, and also some elderly people. And then there's the tourists, of course. And then there's the seasonal locals, as I call them, the people who have homes and live here 6 months out of the year. That is exactly who my customer is. They're coming from markets like Philadelphia, Detroit, New York City, and they're used to the dining experience that they have there. There's not a lot of restaurants on Sanibel that fill that need, and that's what I try and do. And that is my major customer.
I looked at your menu. I was very impressed. It's very sophisticated.
I go in that vein. I go out of my way to do things that no one else, even in Southwest Florida, is doing. Because I think I owe that to the customer who's coming here to have a different experience. You can get a fried grouper sandwich at 15 restaurants on Sanibel, to something different for them. And I'm constantly changing my menu again because I have customers who every Wednesday night will be here at 7 o'clock, or every Friday night, you know, will bring another group of friends in. So I'm constantly changing the menu for them too, because I feel like I owe that to them to keep pushing them as they push me.
Well, now I'm a little lost, and you were at one place, then you came here, and now you're opening someplace else in February. Let our listeners know what you're doing.
I took over this restaurant when it was Redfish Bluefish. One of the owners had passed away, and she had a investor who became now the owner. And she's based in Detroit. Her name is Gretchen Vallade. And she just saw the opportunity and really believed in me and thought that we should have a bigger venue, and purchased an existing restaurant on Periwinkle, which is the main street of Sanibel, and is doing some major construction and building me the restaurant of my dreams. And it just could not have asked for a luckier situation that I'm in.
Of course, we're here in a fluke, too.
It always happens that way.
You were very lucky.
Very lucky. And as I said, chefs, I think, dream of these types of investors or backers. And I don't know if they exist. She doesn't micromanage. She lets me, you know, as long as we can pay the bills, she's fine. But she doesn't influence me creatively. She lets me do, she believes in what I'm trying to do. And that's just absolutely wonderful.
Almost unimaginable, having been in this situation. But at any rate, now, we're looking forward to dinner here. You obviously are very accomplished. What kinds of things would you recommend? What are your signatures?
My beef cheek ravioli have become one of my more popular dishes. Everything we do is handmade. All the pastas, all the ravioli, everything is handmade. All stock sauces we make here, which is, I think, a different, not many places on the island do that. And I think people can actually, are beginning to develop the palate to tell when it's a boxed demi-glace or demi-glace made for 24 hours with roasted veal bones. Some of my favorite things are the curried crab salad, which is another, becoming one of my more popular dishes, as well as my mahi-mahi. I serve it over a banana lentil, creamy banana lentil salad. It's bananas and lentils and a lot of butter and some creme fraiche. And people are always, in fact, I had someone describe it as deliciously surprising, that it doesn't sound as good, but they were intrigued by it and just loved it. And so that's actually becoming one of my more popular dishes as well.
I'm really excited about this meal, Melissa. I'm so delighted to meet you. Thanks for talking On the Menu.
And thank you so much.
Okay, listeners, so that's it for another week of On the Menu Radio. We're delighted that you joined us. We'll look forward to seeing you again, same time, same place, next week.
Bye-bye.